I have radically changed my ways, healed my trauma, changed my deeply entrenched patterns of behavior. And that is what I want for others too. That's why I do this podcast. That's why I'm a coach. I want others to heal in the ways I've healed, but mostly in whatever ways they need to heal according to God's will and plan for them. In fact, that's what I pray for people when I pray for them, that exact thing. Hi, I'm Barb Nangle. I want to welcome you to my podcast, Fragmented to Whole, Life Lessons from 12-Step Recovery, where I help people heal their emotional, psychological, and spiritual wounds and make deep, lasting changes in their lives. I'm the founder and CEO of Higher Power Coaching and Consulting. I'm a boundaries coach who specializes in helping women who are focused on what others are thinking and doing and neglect themselves in the process. And I have coached hundreds of people on how to build healthy boundaries using my exclusive Build framework. On this podcast, I share my experience, strength, and hope from recovery. I don't support or endorse any particular 12-step recovery fellowship, and I don't claim to speak for any particular 12-step fellowship. I also don't believe that 12-step recovery is the only way to recover. You might need additional help. I'm an avid beachcomber who collects sea glass, shells, wood, and stones. I am a formerly closeted fan of the Hallmark Channel, especially the Christmas movies. Hello, Christmas in July. I wear fingerless gloves from September to June because my hands are always cold, so I have about 15 pairs. And I get a huge kick out of counting how many days, weeks, and months there are until my birthday or Christmas at completely random times of the year. My hope is that you'll find my words concretely helpful in improving your life, whether you're in recovery or not. If you like what you've heard on this episode, please screenshot it and share it on your social media and tag me at Higher Power Coaching. This is episode 252, Spilling the Tea on My Family Secrets. This is how family dysfunction gets passed down, part two. If you haven't listened to part one, then I recommend you pause this and go back to episode 251 and listen to that, because you'll understand why I'm sharing this and you'll get some context for what I'm talking about here. I already mentioned in that episode that the second big secret in my family was that my mom smoked, and I mean cigarettes, not weed. I'm going to tell the story as it comes, so I might be going back and forth in time. Hopefully, you'll be able to follow it. Let me start with the fact that my father's mom smoked cigarettes and his dad smoked cigars, and so my dad fucking hated smoking. Now, we knew as kids that my mom smoked cigarettes when she met my dad. We'd seen pictures of her smoking, and we knew that she had quit for my dad. But that wasn't really true, as we found out eventually. It wasn't until I was in recovery that I ever even thought to ask myself the question, why the hell didn't my mom just go, fuck you, Phil, I smoke, and just smoke? Now I'd say that it was part of her codependence, because let me tell you, my mom was codependent AF. We used to call her the enabler when I was a teen. But no, she didn't do that. She hid it from him and from us. But even worse than hiding it, she got us kids to collude with her in hiding it from my dad. If you don't know what collude means, it's to act together secretly or illegally in order to deceive or cheat someone. I'll explain what I mean by all that as we go along here. And this colluding and secrecy is crazy making shit. When I was probably about 10-ish, maybe a little younger, I was with my best friend Tina, and we wanted some chewing gum. So I went into my mom's purse looking for gum, and when I opened up the zipper pocket on the inside, there was a pack of Cool menthol cigarettes and a lighter in there. And I was like, oh my God. And Tina said, what? And I was immediately flooded with shame. I lied like a professional to her by pulling this explanation out of my ass. I said, there's a whole ton of gum in here. And she was like, excellent, let's have it. And I was like, no. She'll know that we took it. Now, I don't know what the fuck Tina thought about that, but I managed to get her out of there. In that instant that I saw the pack of cools, I had this memory from when I was really little. I had found a pack of cool cigarettes somewhere, probably in my mom's purse. And I said, "Mommy, why do you have Linda's cigarettes?" Linda was a family friend and she smoked cool cigarettes. And you know how when you're little, you're very concrete. You can't think abstractly like that they could be someone else's cigarettes. I just assumed they were Linda's cigarettes. And my mom said, "Oh, she asked me to hold on to them for her." So in that moment when I was 10 and I saw those cigarettes in my mom's purse, I knew immediately, oh, those were her cigarettes back then too. They weren't Linda's. And I also realized, oh my God, my mom smokes. And she's been smoking for all these years and she's been lying about it. I was definitely flooded with shame in that moment. And I did whatever I could do to not let Tina know what I just discovered and realized. Then I started paying more attention and began to notice my mom's behavior. I realized that she'd shut her bedroom door when she'd go into her bathroom to smoke. And that was why she always used that bathroom. And that was why she was always in the bathroom for so long. And that was why she always had gum. The next memory is the starkest example of my mother's gaslighting about her smoking. She would smoke in the bathroom connected to her bedroom, and my brother Steve went into her room one day and came out saying, "It smells like smoke in here." And she said, "No, it doesn't. That's the bathroom spray." Now, we all knew it was not the fucking bathroom spray, that it was cigarette smoke. And I'm literally feeling pressure on my chest just thinking about this now. The fact that my mom would bold-faced lie and say, essentially, "What you are perceiving is not real," is, for me, the worst effect of growing up in a dysfunctional family. And that is questioning my own perception. Questioning whether what I perceive is real is actually real. Because if you can't trust yourself to know whether your senses are telling you the truth about what is real, what the fuck can you trust? Sometime later, I'm not sure how many years later, my mom took us three kids on a road trip to Missouri, where she's from, so we could visit her family. My dad worked 7 days a week at the pharmacy, so he didn't do vacations with us. And at this point, neither Steve or I were old enough to drive, so my mom did all the driving. And at the first rest stop on the trip, my mom said, "Listen, kids, I have something to tell you. I've started smoking again, and I cannot make it through this trip without smoking." And we were all like, okay. Now, we all knew that she smoked, but of course, we never talked about it with each other or anyone else. We just sort of took this news in stride. And while we were on that vacation for 2 weeks visiting my mom's extended family, she smoked publicly the whole time. I remember at one point her mother saying, "When did you start smoking again?" And either I didn't hear what my mom said or I don't remember what she said, but she continued to smoke on the trip home. And then when we got home, she went back into hiding with the cigarettes. When I was in eighth grade, so age 13 or 14, I really don't know if this was before or after that trip, I started smoking cigarettes with my neighbor, Tina, the same girl with the gum I mentioned earlier. We first snuck a cigarette from her dad and we smoked it, and it was gross, but we just kept doing it. And I eventually began smoking all the time, but I'd hide it. And this is just so ridiculous, but what I would do sometimes is go into the closet in my bedroom and smoke cigarettes. And one time my brother came into my room and I came out of the closet and he was like, "What the fuck were you doing in there?" And I said, "Looking at my glow-in-the-dark stickers," which I pulled that excuse out of my ass in that moment because I didn't have any glow in the dark stickers. And also, I was smoking. There was smoke. And I was thinking, I don't know how he didn't know I was smoking. But by then, I'm sure he'd internalized the dysfunctional family rule, don't talk, and just didn't say anything about the elephant in the room, the smoke. My parents got divorced when I was about 18 or 19. I don't remember how long after that my mom started publicly smoking. And of course, we never talked about any of this shit. Here's another piece that's relevant. When I was a sophomore in high school, I smoked all the time, but of course, hid it from my family. And one day, a state police officer came into my father's store and told him that somebody had reported that I'd been going around the school complaining about having had weed stolen from me. Of course, my dad didn't tell me this. My mom did because, you know, we don't directly communicate. The day after my dad had searched my room and found a lighter in my purse is when my mom told me that. My parents had always given me privacy before that, so that was a whole new thing to have my room searched. And to him, finding the lighter corroborated that I smoked weed because he didn't know that I smoked cigarettes. He didn't find any cigarettes at the time because I had just decided, this is gross, I'm quitting, and I hadn't bought any cigarettes. So the next day, when my mom told me all this stuff, she said, I know that you smoke cigarettes. And then she told me the story about how someone had reported about me complaining about having weed stolen. And I realized later that I may have been complaining that I couldn't buy weed, but I never complained about having weed stolen. I told my mom I quit smoking. And I remember telling her, well, I went to the store today and I could have bought cigarettes, but I didn't. And then I quit smoking. Now, I don't remember what ended up happening with the weed thing with my dad. And even though I meant it when I told my mom I was quitting smoking, I didn't quit smoking. And I continued to hide the smoking for years. Then at some point, I just started publicly smoking in front of my family. Fast forward, I was age 22 and I woke up one day and thought, again, this is fucking disgusting. It costs too much money. I hate everything about smoking. And I quit. I just quit cold turkey. I gained something like 35 pounds. And as a thin young woman, 35 pounds was a lot of weight. I actually think that that is when the switch sort of flipped for me, where I became a compulsive overeater. I started battling with 35 pounds on and off in my 20s. Then it got to be like 80 to 100 pounds in my 30s and was definitely over 100 pounds as the years went on until I got into recovery. Anyway, after 6 months of quitting smoking, I started smoking secretly. Guess where I got that from? The first time I had a cigarette after those 6 months was when I worked in this dive bar as a bartender. And after everybody left one night, I was cleaning up and someone had left like 3/4 of a cigarette in the ashtray. And I just lit it and smoked it. And I was like, ooh, this is good. And I started doing that when I worked. One night, my boyfriend Mark came to pick me up from the place. And I wanted to smoke before I left, so I wouldn't allow him to come in the bar because I didn't want to see him smoke. So I lied to him and I was like, you can't be in here after hours, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, how are they going to know? And I said, well, what if the owners come by? I just made up lies to hide my smoking. How he didn't smell it, I have no idea. I probably did shots of peppermint schnapps or something like that to cover it up. Another couple of years later, when he and I were living in a different apartment, and by then I was buying my own cigarettes and smoking them secretly and hiding them in my car. Well, he had left the apartment and I thought he was gone for the day. So I went to the bathroom to smoke a cigarette and he surprisingly came home. So I just jumped into the shower and he came in and kissed me. And there's no fucking way that he didn't smell the smoke. So I was riddled with shame and guilt and fear of being caught all the time. At some point, if I was out with friends who smoked and were drinking, which is what we always did, we went out drinking. If I was with friends who smoked, I would smoke cigarettes. And then that went on for years. I basically would tell people I only smoke when I'm drinking. What was really weird was that it was almost like there were times when I felt like I was addicted to the nicotine, But then there were other times when I could go weeks without smoking and it wouldn't bother me that much. Now, I went on like this for years, a couple of decades, really. All the times I lived alone, I would smoke in my home, and I'd never want people to just drop by my home. Smoking was yet another way to isolate myself and keep my distance from people. There was a guy that I dated who came into a bar and he saw me smoking a cigarette. This was when we first started dating. And he later told me that he saw me smoking and that it was unappealing to him to see me smoke. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I only do it when I drink, which was a lie. Now, I dated him for years and I'd even smoke outside at his house while he was away. I always had cigarettes stored in my car. I didn't usually keep them in my purse because of the whole situation with my mom. And here's another thing I would do. I would buy cigarettes, tell myself, I'm not going to do this anymore. And then I would throw them out the window. Now, let me tell you something. I grew up in the 60s and 70s when there were huge campaigns about not littering. Remember the commercial with the Indian who had the tear running down his face because he was canoeing and there was all this garbage in the lake? On top of the public campaigns about not littering, my family was very anti-litter, and we even recycled years before it was popular. We did not fucking litter. I did not fucking litter. And yet here I was willing to violate my no littering value and throw packs of cigarettes out of my car window and cigarette butts for that matter because of all of this fucked up stuff. I can't even say it was because of an addiction because, like I said, it was almost like sometimes I was addicted and sometimes I was not. Now, I kept this up until I was somewhere in my early 40s when I stopped drinking and smoking cigarettes. Now, I didn't make a decision. I didn't quit. I just sort of stopped. It was like I was just done. It happened not long after I was engaged and he dumped me. He dumped me. Once before, this was a different boyfriend. This was like my 40th boyfriend or something like that. He dumped me once before and I was devastated. And then he came back a few months later, asked me to marry him. I said yes. Then he dumped me a second time and I was absolutely devastated. Up until that point in my life, that was the worst thing that happened to me. Now, he and I drank and smoked weed very heavily together. He smoked weed like most people smoke cigarettes. And I hid my cigarette smoking from him too. I think on some level, his dumping me twice woke me up to the fact that my life wasn't fucking working. I actually didn't drink at all for an entire year, and I never smoked cigarettes again. And then after that year, I would drink like a beer or a glass of wine. I did not drink to get drunk, which was the only reason I drank before that 1 year hiatus. After that, I maybe got drunk twice in my life, but it was nothing like the previous decades of my life where the goal was to get obliterated. It was usually just a couple of beers or a glass of wine. I might get a tiny little buzz, but it was no longer about getting shit-faced. When I asked my therapist what she made of me quitting smoking like that after all those years of secrecy, she said something like, I don't know, when issues get resolved, we don't need to do all the fucked up stuff. I don't really know, but I remember thinking it was pretty lame. I was completely perplexed by my own behavior, and the therapist didn't really help. Years later, another therapist talked about how a lot of children of dysfunction will repeat the fucked up behaviors they see as a way to sort of process and understand them. She wasn't talking about me imitating my mom by smoking secretly, but it did help me to understand that I was replicating my mom's behavior. And I learned the secret keeping from my mom that instilled the don't talk rule of dysfunctional families. We literally never talked about this in my family. And there was a lot of shame around all this. The time when I was with Tina and I found the cigarettes in my mom's purse, I immediately felt a flood of shame, but I also felt like I had to lie and protect my mom. But it's not a kid's job to protect their parents. So her secretive behavior led to my secretive behavior. There are so many ways these secrets fuck you up. One is that it gave me a shit of shit. That's hilarious. A hit of shame every time I did it. There's a part of me that kind of wants to die knowing that I'm admitting to the world that I hid my smoking and lied about it for years. And there could be people who were in my life all those years ago who find out. But the fact is, I am a different person now than I was then. I have radically changed my ways, healed my trauma, changed my deeply entrenched patterns of behavior. And that is what I want for others too. That's why I do this podcast. That's why I'm a coach. I want others to heal in the ways I've healed, but mostly in whatever ways they need to heal according to God's will and plan for them. In fact, that's what I pray for people when I pray for them, that exact thing. Every time I threw a pack of cigarettes out the window, every time I was afraid someone's going to catch me, every time I chewed my big red gum so people wouldn't smell the smoke on me, every time I outright lied to people so they wouldn't find out about me smoking, I heaped more and more shame on myself. I gave myself more and more reasons to hide from people, wallow in my shame, and isolate from people. Now, if that is not an anti-intimacy campaign, I don't know what is. And if you can't have intimacy, then you cannot have real, authentic relationships with people in which you thrive. Oh, one other thing just popped up for me. Another one of my boyfriends came home unexpectedly and he kissed me and he was like, "You smell like cigarettes." And again, I pulled some lies out of my ass, like the professional liar that I was, and said, "Yeah, I've smoked a few times recently while drinking." He came back to me later and said, "What am I supposed to make of that? You've been lying to me." And I said, "You know, that's a really good question. I've thought about this and I wondered, should I tell him? Should I not tell him?" And I wasn't sure because it wasn't something I was doing all the time, so I didn't know how to handle it. And I hadn't made up my mind about whether to say anything or not. Now, I fabricated all of that shit out of my ass. That was just complete lies. That's how good I was at lying. And here I thought, when I got into recovery, that I was an honest person. I've shared all of this partly to get this shit out there in the light of day, to shine light on the dark secrets of my past. As I said in the beginning of last episode, and as we say in recovery, we're as sick as our secrets. And I want to be well. And I want to let other people know that your family secret may not be something egregious, like somebody murdered someone. It could be something like in my family that's relatively benign, like somebody smokes. But it still fucks up your family. It fucks up your psyche. It fucks up your life. The shame is so evident everywhere in all this stuff. And then there's the collusion, colluding with my mom and us kids about her smoking. We all knew she smoked, but my dad didn't. Oh, I just remembered another story about her smoking. At one point, my dad was working on the sink in their bathroom because it was clogged, and I was watching him as he pulled this disgusting gunk out of the pipes, and he was like, "What the fuck is this?" And I knew immediately that it was cigarette ashes, and I couldn't understand how they collected in there, but I knew that gross, disgusting muck was cigarette ashes because she'd been flicking in that sink for years. And I knew what it was, and he didn't. More secretiveness. Speaking of my dad, he must have been full of shame with his cheating on my mom, and he projected that shame onto me. When I did the 12 steps, it occurred to me that the two or three times he called me a whore, which, by the way, I was not, was probably because he was a whore and was projecting that onto me. He behaved in that way, so he just assumed I must behave in that way, or maybe everybody behaves in that way. Having and keeping family secrets is so damaging. It's a way of isolating the family from everybody else. It's a way of ensuring that the shame gets passed down. It's a way of abandoning ourselves, and it's abandoning the truth. And here's the thing about the truth. The truth is. It just is. I have an episode about the truth setting you free. I'll link it in the show notes. But essentially, it's about knowing that people who have always told the truth don't know what it means to say the truth shall set you free because they don't have anything to be set free from. But when you've been lying your whole fucking life and you finally start telling the truth, it's like, oh my God, life is so much easier. It is so freeing. It might be difficult to tell someone the truth as you're saying it, but as soon as you've said it, you let go of all that tension and worry and anxiety of trying to figure out what am I going to say that's believable and how do I keep track of all that stuff. It is just so freeing to tell the truth. But we were shackled by all these lies and all these secrets. And part of what I'm doing here is unshackling myself and setting myself free by sharing these secrets. Now, I would love to hear anything you have to say after hearing all this stuff. Was this helpful to hear? What came up for you when you heard all this? I want people to understand what family dysfunction can look like. It doesn't have to be that you got the shit beat out of you. It doesn't have to be that you were told you're a piece of shit or you were blamed for everything. It can be this kind of stuff. And it's no wonder that I didn't know how to relate to other human beings, especially romantically, but really in any area of my life, until I got into recovery. And that has been one of the most incredible blessings of my recovery. First and foremost, my relationship with myself has improved dramatically. I don't fucking gaslight myself anymore. I don't shame myself. I don't stay in toxic situations or toxic relationships. If there are people in my life where I have to put an enormous amount of emotional labor into the relationship just so I can be around them and have my nervous system not get all jacked up, I don't keep them in my life anymore. And I learned how to do all of this stuff through the process of 12-step recovery. And that's partly why I do this work. It's almost like I'm reaching into the past and trying to help former me. I want other people to get the kind of freedom I've gotten. I want them to be able to have healthy relationships with themselves and others. That being said, if you really want to change your deeply entrenched patterns, you have got to sign up for Your Empowered Life. Your Empowered Life. I guess I'm losing it here. It's my 8-week semi-private coaching program for women that starts at the end of March. There's an early bird special for 20% off if you apply by March 1st, 2024. After that, it's going to go up to the full price. There are only 12 spots, and some of those are already taken. I'm not sure how many at this point, but I don't understand why you wouldn't apply if you want to learn how to thrive in your relationships, if you want to stop faking who you are, and you want to become honest and authentic with yourself and others, and you want to stop beating the crap out of yourself. If you know what you need to do to make changes in your life and you're just not doing it, this program is for you. You will not only get coaching from me, you'll also have the support of other women, and all of us will help you hold yourself accountable and follow through. Now, when you apply, you're not committing. If your application is accepted, then you and I have a brief application phone call, and that is when you would decide if you want to make the commitment or not. So if you want to learn how to speak up and say things like, this is okay with me and this is not okay with me, which is something I was incapable of doing, as you can see from the way I was raised in my family, that makes a lot of sense. You can check out in the show notes the link to find out all the details about Your Empowered Life, or you can go to higherpowercc.com/empoweredlife. The link to the application is on that page. If it seems like it's the group for you, it would be crazy not to at least apply. There is a payment plan because I want the program to be accessible to everyone, and you can still get the early bird special even with a payment plan. For those who pay in full, they get a free toolkit for effective communication and relationships. All right, that is it for me. Here's to you bringing your family secrets into the light of day. If you're ready to finally have an enjoyable, relaxing summer doing things you really want to do, instead of always following other people's agendas, I have some openings for private clients right now. If you are really tired of saying yes to things you really don't want to do and being overly accommodating to others, this is for you. It's time to start accommodating yourself. Maybe you're dissatisfied with your relationships and overwhelmed with all kinds of difficult feelings because of your interactions with others. If you'd like to get your life in order before the summer hits, go to barbchat.net and sign up for a free 30-minute call with me about my private coaching so we can get started right away. That way, you'll be done by summer. This is for people who are finally ready to make deep, lasting changes in their relationship patterns, including their relationships with themselves, their partners, family, friends, and colleagues. Go to barbchat.net. If you like this podcast, and I'm guessing you did, or you wouldn't still be listening, then you're gonna love the other things I have to offer. If you'd love pre-released podcast scripts and episodes before anyone else gets them, or if you'd love access to content from my private vault that I developed exclusively for my private clients, which is like having a work session with me without me actually being there, go to patreon.com/higherpowercoaching. There are three tiers ranging from as low as $4 up to $24 a month. You'll also love my weekly newsletter, Friday Fragments, which has content very similar to the podcast. You can check it out at fridayfragments.news. That's fridayfragments.news. Please like and subscribe to my podcast on your favorite podcast outlet. I'd also love it if you'd leave a review, which you can do either in the show notes or on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find my podcast so they can get the benefits you've gotten from listening. If someone came to mind when you listened to this particular episode, please share it with them. And my favorite place to hang out on social media is Instagram. I'm at Higher Power Coaching. Please DM me there. I'd love to hear what you got from this episode. I run group and private coaching programs on building healthy boundaries. Whether you need help with boundaries in your personal, professional, or romantic life, I can help. Head on over to barbchat.net, where you can hop onto my calendar for a free 30-minute Better Boundaries consultation. My ideal client is someone who is ripe for change. If that's you, I would love to work with you. My goal with all my work is to help you make lasting changes in your life like I've made deep lasting changes in my life. Remember, it's never too late to recover. No one is beyond hope, and healing is possible. Thanks for listening.